Dr. King was not silent.
January 18th, join the Central Brooklyn Martin Luther King Commission. Voices of Youth celebrate Dr. King.
When people thought he would fall, he stood mighty and tall.
I missed the nonviolent demonstrations against the unjust legal administration.
Come to Prospect Heights High School Monday, January 18th, a special celebration of Dr. King's birthday.
I wish Martin Luther King was watching me now, my inspiration.
Come to Prospect Heights High School Monday, January 18th, a special celebration of Dr. King's birthday.
Abortion rights are in a state of emergency. Clinics are being shot up, set on fire, and closed down by fascist laws. Women are being shamed, hounded, and harassed for exercising their right to abortion or even birth control. This must be stopped. Forced motherhood is female enslavement. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I am calling on you to join me by getting on the bus January 22nd and heading down to D.C. to stand up for abortion rights on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Go to stoppatriarchy.org for more details and bus information. Be part of defeating the war on women.
Join Brooklyn for Peace Arts and Culture Committee with Vincent J. Entande, author of African Americans Against the Bomb, the compelling story of black activists who fought for nuclear disarmament by connecting the nuclear issue with the fight for racial equality. Two dates. Friday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. at Word Bookstore, 126 Franklin Street in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And Saturday, January 30th, 2 p.m. at Brooklyn Friends Meeting House, 110 Schermerhorn Street in downtown Brooklyn. For more information, check brooklynpeace.org or call 718-624-5921. That's African Americans Against the Bomb with Vincent J. Entande, Friday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. at Word Bookstore.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York, New York.
Say you're my earth. Listen to my heart speak.
Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
I wait for you.
I wait for you. Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
Michelle Indiacello, Earth, and you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And Heart of Mind, for many of you, might recall that we broadcast at 1 p.m. on Mondays for many years, and in other slots before that. And right now, we are occupying this lovely, transformative slot where we turn from day to night to morning in just a moment. So it's a beautiful time to be with you. I'm Catherine Davis, and I'm joined by co-host
Paulette Spencer.
Welcome, Paulette, in studio with me here today. And we've been having a lot of fun, I think so. Growing and cultivating this show. And we have a very special guest standing by, and we're going to artistically move into that with a little bit of music. Then we're going to introduce our guest. But for people who just might be tuning in, I did want to make that sort of that integration to know that we are doing expansive work in the world of health, consciousness, and spirituality. And I've been producing Heart of Mind for, it seems like, 12, 13, 14 years, something like that. I'm also a co-producer for Health Action, which now occupies that 1 o'clock slot on Mondays, which I've been doing more than 20 years, it seems. I've lost track, actually. And I myself am a health practitioner. I am an energy healer and a Qigong teacher, a spiritual doula, actually. I help people to move through spiritual obstacles and obstacles within their emotional field, energy field. So I work with people really to cultivate and to heal. And from my experience, much of what happens in our lives comes from early wounds in our lives. So emotional, spiritual, psychological wounding that occurs to us in childhood manifests as disease in adulthood. So part of the healing process is to go back in time to find that point of wounding and begin to heal from that place forward. And it's energetic. It's not like therapy. It's really an energetic transformation. And Paulette, you have also a history in health, and you've been working in health policies. Just give a little bit of background for what you've been doing.
Well, my background is really in public health and aspects of global public health policy and management. Mm-hmm. And on a local level, I've done work at community level with residents, and I've gotten an understanding of behavioral health, why people do the things they do, mm-hmm. and hopefully I've contributed to educating them so that their choices are wiser.
And we collaborated on a program when you were working with an organization in the Bronx where you had created a program that was counseling first-time pregnant women.
Yes.
In the South Bronx.
Yes, we had a good spa.
So we had like a nice spa thing, and I was teaching meditation and relaxation,
yes.
But it had nutrition. There was a birth doula there, so that women who might not think they have options find out that they really do have options.
Yes, absolutely.
And we spoke about how important it was for them to prioritize themselves, their health, and their child's health. So there's a lot that we can do to further the education and the integration of these principles on a community level. And that's a lot, that's a part of what we're doing here with Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. So we're going to play a little bit more music, and then Paulette is going to introduce our guest. Stay tuned.
I'm gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. And as I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Honest disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one got to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his way.
Special guest. We're really going to be looking at health disparities and the state of mental health in communities of color, given the historical record and ways in which we can perhaps encourage some healing in that area. And with us this evening, we have Dr. Arthur Hodge, who is a physician and researcher and he's affiliated with the Scudder Interventions Services Foundation's work on suicide prevention. And so welcome, Dr. Hodge.
Good morning.
Good morning.
nice to be here.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Welcome very much to Heart of Mind.
Thank you for asking me to talk about this important subject in public health.
Yes, thank you. And I wanted just to get a sense of the areas that interest you the most. I've done a bit of work and looked at some of the issues of health disparities and stress and the ways in which stress can wear on a person's physical health ways in which that stress can also affect the people we love and are closest to. And so maybe we should just start with your area of specialty and the work that you do.
Well, I am a physician, but I've recently become interested in public health, particularly mental illness, substance abuse, that dynamic, as well as I'm an HIV peer educator, so I'm also interested in the impact of HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, on the, and as it relates to the drug epidemic in this country. I've also done some work in maternal and child health, and that's actually how I got my start on my quest to educate about depression, postpartum depression. It started out with just concentrating on women, and then it expanded into looking at the whole family dynamic, including the male, who is often overlooked.
And so on that note, I'd like to spend the majority of this time really talking about the work that you've done in depression in general.
Okay.
What sparked your interest in this topic, and what work has been most in the forefront concerning depression in people of color?
Well, as you know, I work very closely with you in a Bronx organization, and you had asked me if I would be interested in doing a special training on postpartum depression. And at the time, I didn't really know much about the subject, but then as I began to do the research on it, I realized that it has been, for at least 50 years, a major public health problem that was first addressed back in the 1960s, and yet here it is today. We're still having discussions about it with very little results. The recent rash of infant deaths as a result of mothers who are suffering from postpartum depression, which had gone unrecognized, made it even more of a important issue for me to investigate. So I work along with Mr. Scudder with CISFI. That's the acronym, or that's how we pronounce it. And we hold workshops to educate people about mental illness and crisis, and try to discuss ways that the community at large can implement services to women at risk and families at risk while they're in crisis, as opposed to wait until after the harm has been done.
And so what are some of these health disparities when it comes to mental health?
Well, as it pertains to mental health, there is a lack of access to health care in minority communities, poverty, lack of education, And when I say education, I'm not necessarily academic education, but just lack of public awareness and education about signs and symptoms of disease, and the impact that chronic conditions like depression and diabetes and high blood pressure can have on the whole family unit and on the community. Particularly when it comes to men, I was reading as I was going through some information about depression in men. There has not been any concrete studies done that are directed or focused particularly on African American men and depression, or even Latino or Hispanic community and depression. In 25 years, one of the literature that I review, it said that in 25 years, there's been 19 studies that specifically focused on depression solely in African American men in 25 years.
Wow.
And there's only been one major study, which was conducted by Albert Einstein, that looked at the U.S. Hispanic Latino population. So these, even though we make up a large segment of the population, we are so underrepresented in terms of research. And so it's just not a matter of lack of access, where basically there's so much more to be discovered about culture and the whole issue, the whole discussion around cultural competency in our society, in our community.
This is Catherine. I had a thought as you were speaking about the depression and men especially, and I'm wondering if you can, you know, there may not be any studies on this, but just from your experience, can you make a correlation between this depression and the kind of violence that we see surrounding young black men, either them engaged in it or violence being perpetrated upon them?
It's funny that you should say that. Depression in men is often covert. And when I say that, this presentation is not based upon the DSM or the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the Bible of psychiatry. So men in particular do not present with depression like women do. And it's part of it is because of the socialization that men are not supposed to feel. Mm-hmm. And are not supposed to be helpless, disempowered, or vulnerable. In communities of color, however, there's a whole different dynamic as it relates to depression. There's a general mistrust of the system that dates back many, many, many years, at least 50 years. And so therefore, it's very difficult to diagnose and recognize, even to ones very close to you. A lot of what we consider violent behavior in men may have undertones of depression. Anger is, because men are socialized to suppress vulnerable feelings, anger, which masks sadness and fear, is the only negative emotion that men are socially permitted to exhibit. And because of lack of healthy coping mechanisms that have never been taught or even presented, it's a self-perpetuating cycle of violence and lack of self-esteem. I mean, to be really honest, like depression is a disorder of self-esteem. Mm. And in men, in men in particular, right, the lower a man's self-esteem is, the more they try to supplement. There's a need to feel that they're in control. The violence that's been inflicted upon our young people only enhances that, you know, and makes it very, very, very difficult to distinguish between whether someone is truly violent or someone is undergoing some untapped issue that has not been resolved since childhood.
That clarifies and really affirms me what I suspected to be the case. So I really appreciate that. And is there? I know you were talking about initially the postpartum depression and how widespread that is.
Yes.
Does that also correlate to? I presume the depression that we're seeing in young adults and teens in
yes.
our culture as well.
Interestingly enough. Interestingly enough, as I was reviewing the differences between depression in women and depression in men, right, men are impulsive. We've had cases where the women displayed some psychotic features. Some had religious ideations. They thought the child was possessed or whatever. But in every case, there was a pattern that indicated there was something wrong that was overlooked. In men, on the other hand, there was a case here in Long Island where a young man, killed his baby, severely lacerated the liver, broke the ribs, fractured the skull, and of course, he's looked upon as being a monster. But if you look even deeper in context, here it is, he was a man that has two children out of two different relationships. And on Sunday, he took care of the three-week newborn, and on Monday, he took care of the 19-month-old. And not having the ability to cope, and he's 26 years old, and not having the ability to cope, you know, it may have masked some type of, you know, some depressive mode, leading to him just acting on impulse and just losing it. You know, of course, the nature of the damage, he was a big guy, he's a little baby, you know, makes it seem like it's really intense, you know. But there may have been undertones of depression. It's been found that 50% of men with postpartum depression get it as a result of the mother. The mother is the trigger for postpartum depression in men. And I often ask this question, can you imagine two adults living in a house with depression that's been unrecognized and undiagnosed, one in sadness, one in anger, and not recognizing? It's like putting a match to gasoline.
Yes, indeed. And I wanted just to speak a bit about postpartum depression in women.
In women?
Yeah, because I remember you're giving a presentation that was really spectacular where you talked about the science of hormones and how that affects a woman's sense of self after birth.
Yes. As it pertains to women and postpartum depression, it's a continuum, right? There somehow seems to be this concentration on postpartum depression that it only occurs after the baby is born. But in actuality, it's more a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder that begins even before the actual childbirth. it can last throughout the entire pregnancy. As women become anxious with the changes that are going to be made in their lives, and so therefore, progesterone, which prepares the body for implantation and helps the baby to remain attached during pregnancy. Progesterone is responsible for making a mother feel very happy, and it's a nurturing hormone. It's a feel-good hormone. At childbirth, when the placenta is delivered, because as you know, childbirth occurs in two stages. First, there's the delivery of the baby, and then there's the delivery of the placenta. Upon expulsion of the placenta, the hormone level, progesterone levels drop dramatically. And as a result of that drop in the progesterone level, estrogen levels go up. And women begin to feel less energy and very tired. There's also an increase in proteins, binding proteins produced by the liver that make such hormones as thyroid hormone not free in the bloodstream. And so women become hypothyroid, and that is associated in itself with a type of depression. Also, there's less cortisol, which helps us to deal with stress as a result of the increase in estrogen. And the impact that it has on producing binding proteins from the liver. So there's an entire hormonal dynamic that occurs around the time of pregnancy that is responsible for a change in mood in mothers. Now, it's supposed to last only 2 weeks. Supposed to. But the universe being as it is, we're not all the same. And there are certain red flags. Interestingly enough, studies have shown that at the same time that women are experiencing these hormonal changes, so are men. They don't understand why it happens, but it also happens in men at the same time. There's a shift.
What happens in men in terms of the science?
There's hormonal changes. The same hormonal changes that women endure also occur in men. But they have no idea why there's a change in hormone levels.
You mean during the pregnancy and during, you know, it's reflecting what's happening to the woman's body is also happening in the man's body at the same time?
Yes, yes.
Well, you know, I don't find it that odd in the sense that if you put a number of women living in the same home, they're all going to start menstruating at the same time. There's a certain rhythm in biology.
Yes.
So I'm not that surprised. And I actually saw that happen with one of my youngest brother. Whenever his wife was pregnant, he seemed to suffer more than she did.
Yeah. And that is something that, and unfortunately, because no one is, you know, people basically get a use to one type of behavior or one type of pattern. So they would not pay attention to that. And what ends up happening is not recognizing early on the changes that are occurring. Because let's face it, most of the time when people come to visit you when you have a baby, they're looking at the baby, they're not looking at you. They're not paying attention to you. So it's you're unidentified, the symptoms are obscured, and mother and father, in some cases, they both suffer in silence. Hmm.
Wow. Is it possible for this postpartum condition to continue for years, like through multiple births, and a person is just living in a depressed state because it's never dealt with?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, One article suggests that women during the postpartum period should be screened and followed for at least 2 years after the child is born. If a mother has been suspected of having postpartum depression, she is at higher risk of another episode of postpartum depression with each successive birth.
I read a statistic this evening indicating that, for the most part, many women of color are not actually included in the national statistics for postpartum depression, because the way they gather the information is based on a person's ability to self-identify as being depressed after giving birth. And what they find is, even in the cases where a woman is says that she's depressed, in many cases, the diagnosis is based on something else. So a woman of color is less likely to actually be diagnosed with postpartum depression, even when it exists.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I feel it is very important that screening be done on all mothers. It is the law, first of all. The Governor Cuomo in 2014 passed the maternal depression bill that encourages not only OBGYNs or primary care doctors, but it also encourages pediatricians to screen for postpartum depression in women. And it should be done. It should be done. Unfortunately, many, many doctors' offices, especially in minority communities, do not have access to those screening tools, which you can basically print out off of the internet. Mm. They are not extensive. You know, my ideal plan would be, while the patient is sitting in the office, medical assistants can give they're self-report questionnaires. So the mother just has to answer it in the waiting room. And by the time the mother gets into the doctor's office, it's already scored by the medical assistant. And then the doctor, being educated about signs and symptoms, doesn't necessarily have to treat. If you're not a mental health professional or you're not comfortable with it, you don't have to treat, but you should be able to refer patients who are at risk to appropriate resources. And I think this is what happens in minority communities. They're just not accessibility to the tools just don't exist. Hmm. And so therefore there's a lot of underreporting, because to leave it up to a patient to decide whether they're depressed or not doesn't seem
practical
or logical, for that matter,
or ethical.
Right.
Yeah. We were thinking of maybe taking a few listener calls. Are you up to taking some calls if we have
no
questions?
Problem.
So if you'd like a call in and have a question for our guest, Arthur Hodge, the on-air phone line is 718-780-8888,
718-780-8888. So, as we sort of wait for phone calls to come in, I know that also an area of your specialty is suicide. And I guess that's the other extreme here.
Yes.
And I was wondering, as we sort of get into the conversation, if you could speak about some of the work that you've done around the area of suicide.
CISFI holds on the second and fourth Thursday of every month. CISFI is headquarters in the Bronx. And on the second and fourth Thursday of every month, there's a suicide and depression support group focusing on various topics like on the 14th of January, they'll be talking about coping with and healing a broken heart, having to do with struggles and life challenges, dealing with loss of relationships, unhealthy relationships, loss of loved ones. They've also discussed topics on gun violence, if you've lost anyone to gun violence. So there's a support network in the Bronx. Unfortunately, despite a lot of advertisement, attendance sometimes is not very great. But we at CISFI continue to go into the community to educate. And we do not only just educate the community, we also educate community-based organizations. Brett goes into the schools and talks to the students, talks to the teachers. And recently, there's a push, especially with the Mayor Wife's Thrive NYC initiative. There's a push to incorporate more faith-based organizations in the healing process. Because, especially in the African-American community, the church plays a major, major part in the healing of souls and spirits. And we kind of have to change the dynamic or change the culture of thinking that somehow the stigma of mental illness, that it's somehow wrong or sinful, and praying over it or doing rituals over it is somehow going to eradicate the problem when it's coming from a deeper source. We were talking about suicide. Women statistically are more likely to commit suicides. Men are four times more likely to complete them. And the highest suicide rates among men is a worldwide phenomenon. And more men are actually committing suicide. And that is simply because they are very impulsive, so they act on their thoughts more quickly, and they use lethal means. A worrying trend is there's an increasing rate of suicide among younger men between the ages of 18 and 29. 2010 CDC study showed that among African Americans, even though African Americans have a lower risk, lifetime risk of depression, they have the highest rate of suicide. And it's the third leading cause of death in African American males between 15 and 24. Another statistics that caught my eye is that in the last 30 years, the rates of African American youth in the 10 to 14 age group has skyrocketed.
Well, we have a caller who wanted to had a comment in relation to what you were speaking of. So
okay,
Let's try to bring her on. Hello, you're on the air.
Catherine?
Yes.
I'm calling because 1961, a little brother who's a grown man now, my mother had him. We didn't know anything about postpartum.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Hawk, how are you?
I am fine. How are you this evening?
Okay, you're a doctor, right?
No. Yes.
Okay. I'm always asking the Most High to forgive because we didn't know. She was acting irrational. Police came, took her down to court. And the hearing, the judge didn't know. And he said, well, she should go to Manteno. Manteno in Illinois is the place,
Okay.
Okay. And she had to spend years, a couple of years there because we didn't know postpartum was what was happening. And I'm really regretful, hurtful. She's gone now, our mother. But and I'm glad to hear you talking about it, and I do hope people look at it and get more awareness of what, because our ignorance, I'm saying ignorance, it really cost her, but it cost us too.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, there's a push now in our community. There's a push now, right, to increase awareness and promote education, and that includes the judicial system. It's multidisciplinary, so it involves all the areas that are involved, because a lot of little innocent babies, there's a lot of infanticide. Mm-hmm. So even our criminal justice system has to become educated on signs of symptoms. Mm-hmm. People have to be able to come. We must all be hyper-vigilant.
Yes.
We are each other's keeper.
Okay. And I'd like to know how I'd like to help. But she's gone now, but still, what we put her through, not knowing, you know.
That is a painful thing to have to live with. Loss of a parent.
Right.
You know,
To that.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is treatable. Postpartum depression is treatable.
Yes. Right. And I'm given,
If it's recognized early, identified early, and there's the proper counseling, there's medication. We've come a long way from 1960s, unfortunately,
uh-huh.
Right? And many women are reluctant to take medications, but there are some antidepressants that women can take that are not harmful to the mother or the baby.
Yeah, right. And I guess family being around her might have helped. Yeah.
What is really consistent with depression across the board is lack of social support.
The family, okay.
So it could be family, it could be, they have someone that you can trust.
Yes.
Okay. Someone that you can trust, that you can talk about how you feel and not feel that the shame of being judged.
Yeah. Are you going to tell us where, I'm in my 70s now. So, like, I can volunteer, whatever. If you could let us know where to go and everything, you know, to help situations like that.
Okay.
And I'll be listening.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hawk. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Bless you, Barakalafi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was an interesting call. So maybe, Dr. Hart, you can give out again the group.
The Suicide and Depression Support Group?
Yeah.
It's at the East Bronx Academy.
Okay. East Bronx Academy.
1716 1716 Southern Boulevard in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And it meets the second and fourth Thursday of the month. The next meeting is actually tomorrow, the 14th, from 6 to 9 p.m.
And is there a phone number people can call for information or to get resource for help?
CISFI has a crisis response team. It's 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is
917. Uh-huh.
651.
Okay.
1889. And also, it is global. And like I said, it's a 24/7 number.
Can you repeat the number again, please?
The number is 917-651-1889.
Okay. And if somebody wanted to volunteer, would they also call that CISFI number?
Yes, yes.
Because they might be able to direct them and how they could volunteer.
Because, yes, Brett will be able to direct them, yeah.
And can you tell us again what CISFI stands for?
It stands for the Suicide Intervention Services Foundation, Inc.,
mm-hmm.
and the Suicide Prevention Institute.
Okay, that sounds great. And the support meeting is in the East Bronx?
It's at the East Bronx Academy.
East Bronx Academy, okay.
Yes.
I'm going to put this up on my website,
okay.
At heartofmindradio.com, so people will be able to go there and reference it if they need it. So,
sure.
Also,
for the listeners, on next Friday, the 22nd of the 22nd of January, there is a Bronx Male Depression Conference.
Male depression, okay.
This conference focuses specifically about depression in men.
Mm-hmm. Which is greatly neglected, as you said.
Yes.
Okay.
And hold on one second. I thought I had the paper here with me.
Well, what you can do also is you can email that to Paulette, and I'll put it up on the website.
Okay, I'll email both things to you.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. So the Bronx Male Depression Conference, the theme is healing and removing the mask, pride, myths, and stigmas of male emotions.
Wow, that's big. Okay.
And that will be on Friday, January 22nd, from 8 in the morning to 12 in the afternoon at the Urban Health Plan, which is 1054 Simpson Street, fourth okay. floor in the Bronx.
Okay.
I will send an email to Paulette because it's an event registered through Eventbrite.
Okay. That sounds great. And we'll put it on the website. So anyone can attend this event?
Yes. It's open to the public.
Okay, that sounds great. A lot of people might want to participate in that. We might even make a cart for it and run it on the air.
We'll announce it for
We'll make an announcement so that people across the schedule will be able to find out more about it.
Yes.
And possibly participate in it.
I'll be one of the speakers. I'm one of the speakers.
Well, that makes sense.
I'll be speaking. There's another African American brother who is the founder of Depressed Gay Black Men. He will be speaking about his organization and his work with the dealing with the issues surrounding gay men and depression to minimize suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also another brother from Mentoring USA to discuss the healthy lifestyle and self-esteem program. They work mostly with mentoring and children.
Wow, that sounds very powerful. Is anybody going to be recording it?
I don't know.
Okay.
If it's going to be recorded.
It would be nice.
I can find out.
Yeah, or find out if we can come record it. Because it just sounds like something that needs to reach a broad audience.
Yes. One of the things usually when we do these workshops is that we present the information, but then we have a panel discussion on ways that as a community we can implement changes.
That's a good point to kind of conclude our talk on. If you could offer our listeners a few pointers on what they can do to improve their potential state of depression, what recommendations would you make?
Talk about it. It's very important. It is very important that you speak honestly about how you're feeling to somebody. My experience has been, and I have found that, you know, pain shared is pain lessened.
Yeah.
And so there you can call the CISFI number, the 24/7 number, if it's if you feel that if you can't cope with what's going on in life, whatever is challenging you. And more than likely, the way that CISFI works, we will refer you to the appropriate source. If you don't know, somebody will know.
Okay, that's very, very powerful. I really thank you. And thank you, Paulette, for bringing this discussion to our air. And you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight, over WBAI Radio in New York. Our guest has been Arthur Hodge, MD. And any final words, Arthur?
For having me on your show this evening, and also to encourage anyone that is struggling that you are not alone. You are never alone, and help is available. Help is available, even within our community. Help is available. There are a lot of federally funded programs. If you don't have insurance, or if you're underinsured, there are a lot of federally funded community-based organizations that are working towards assisting people in crisis, individuals in crisis.
Beautiful.
Well, thank you, Arthur.
And, okay.
I guess I can call you Arthur.
I'd just like to mention for the New York listeners that in November, the mayor's wife, Charlene McCrae, announced an initiative. They got a call, Thrive NYC. It's an $850 million program which aims to hire 400 mental health clinicians to go into the community to provide mental health training, and in the hopes to destigmatize mental illness and make mental health care more accessible. And in August, the mayor collaborated with a federal agency with Connections to Care, right? And the whole aim is to integrate mental health services into existing community-based organizations and to train staff in basic services, like providing screenings to identify people at risk. So there's a big push towards making services available, mental health services available to the community.
This is great news. And so we'll just have to keep tabs of that so we can let people know how it's developing. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm just going to give out this number one more time for SISFI.
917-651-1889.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All the best.
Bye-bye. All right, bye. Thanks.
That was really fabulous. I just want to, before we go finish the program, we have a bit more to go. We'll be talking and taking your calls. I just wanted to remind you that this next Wednesday, the 20th, you have an opportunity to join myself and Paulette at the Heart of Mind Live at the Commons, and we're going to be talking about energy and how to empower yourself from the inside by accessing what you naturally have there to heal and be a resource for your body, for your life. So that is next Wednesday, January 20th, 7 to 9 p.m. The doors open at 6:30, and the Commons is right underneath WBAI at 3 on the first floor. A good conversation. We're actually going to be sharing some of these tools with you and being able to make a difference, I think, in all of our lives. These are the very same tools that I've learned and studied for many years and have found them to be very, very effective. So hopefully you'll be with us on Wednesday, January 20th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. And we're going to play a little music. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But we want to give you maybe something a little more inspiring to as we move through this morning.
Barriers, the taller I become, the farther you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone, but no, so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. The more you refuse to hear my voice, the louder I will sing. Jericho, our lies will come tumbling. Deny my place and time, you squander wealth that's mine. My light will shine so brightly, it will blind you, cause there's something inside so strong, so strong. I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, there's something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. Brothers and sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough, well, we know better. Just look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. Something inside so strong. And I know that I can make it. You're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, there's something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong.
Listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis in studio with
Paulette Spencer.
And you, yes, you are here with us. Those of you who are listening at 99.5 FM, or maybe you're listening on WBAI.org, or maybe you'll be listening in the future on the on the web, on the archive, which you can also do. So we have some time to take a few calls if you want to call in and sort of maybe reflect on what we heard or reflect on things coming in the future. The number here is 718-780-8888. And I didn't want to spend a lot of time talking about the event next week, but I do hope that you will take us up on this offer and come and participate in this healing circle. And it's going to be, we're going to be doing some inner work with releasing old wounds, childhood wounds, past life wounds. It could be any kind of a issue that is blocking and creating an obstacle for you moving forward in your life at this time. So it's going to be a focused, fun event because it's fun to do this. Well, for me. So the number here again is 718-780-8888. And you can join us with your phone call at any time. And then in the meantime, we will gab about what we just heard. To me, it was very powerful, this the interview we shared with our guest, Arthur Hodge, Dr. Arthur Hodge. And what we were talking about once the music went down is that it's really very compelling and powerful when you realize you're speaking to someone who has a level of real dedication and love for what they're doing and mission, purpose. And it's rare to be able to have your life in that kind of a direction where you're just focused on purpose. You know what you're doing. You know what you came in the world to do, and you're doing it. I think a lot of people have that information inside of them, but they haven't all reached to the point of really being able to know what it is or being able to navigate that path. So it's beautiful to see that there is change occurring in the world in a way that maybe we wouldn't expect. But it's happening because people are standing up for change. People are deciding the kind of doctor or physician they want to be, or people are deciding the kind of broadcaster they want to be, because there are many, many opportunities in the world to sell out and maybe make money, but you know, it takes real grit to be able to say, no, I'm going to focus on this mission, because that's pretty special. It's not so easy to find, to be open to that, to the inspiration of your life, really, because that's very often what leads us in these directions. I know that when I started in the direction of health was as a consequence of my mother, who had multiple sclerosis. And I spent most of my life, well, not anymore because I'm getting kind of on the other side of senior citizen land, well, almost. But I spent a good chunk of my life caring for my mother during a time when the medical system didn't know what to do with that kind of ailment, and having to be an advocate in the hospital system for her over and over again. And I could remember being 9 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, fighting with doctors in the hospital over things because they didn't want to. There was an attitude at that time, well, we can't cure it, so we don't care. I mean, they didn't say that, but they didn't really try. They didn't really try to help. And it was that attitude that shortened her life more than the disease itself. So it really is encouraging to me to see the medical profession from the inside out becoming more ethical and revising itself and really caring about the work that they're doing and doing it from a perspective of community and caring. And so it's getting to the point that this is really changing in the world.
Yes, I can say that for my part. What drew me to public health was that I have relatives who are in the medical profession, one of whom is a cousin, but he was more like my brother. And at some point, we shared an apartment. just after he finished his medical residency. So we hung out together a lot. And he happened to be a really good teacher. So the conversations in the car would be, so tell me what are autoimmune diseases? Mm-hmm. And he would just sort of just list it, you know, and he was brilliant at just describing things in layperson's language. And I think having enough of those conversations sort of piqued my interest. I knew that I can't really stomach a lot of what physicians have to see as part mm-hmm. of their profession. But that didn't diminish my interest in the way that the human body works mm-hmm. and how human behavior affects the way that your body actually functions and sustains itself. And so that, I think, is what brought me to public health, amongst other things, which is where the serendipity of where I happened to work at a certain period of my life, where I was exposed to the work of a lot of physicians who were my supervisors.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. My relationship with the medical profession was like the dark side. You got heaven, I got hell. But it had served, it served me in that it put me on the mission of finding the complementary, the alternative, and beginning to recognize that the medical profession doesn't have all the answers. And what I came to understand through my studies is that the human body is very powerful, and that the human spirit is very powerful, and we can heal ourselves in so many different ways that don't require surgery, that don't require medicine. I'm not saying there aren't times when you need those things, but the greater proportion of ailments that are suffered by people are, as you were saying, the consequence of stress and lifestyle. And even many of the diseases, the autoimmune diseases or things such as multiple sclerosis, which is really about, you know, the erosion of the myelin sheath on the spine. Even that, in many ways, is about sensitivity, you know. And so there's so much you can do by understanding, coming to an understanding of where your body is and what your body needs and being able to provide that. And also working through stress and, releasing old angst and anxiety and wounds. So we grow up in a society that causes us to be performers, to be doers, to be, and not just in completing a task, but in our beingness. People are not encouraged to have authenticity, but to have images. And in that creation of an image, we lose the essence of who we are, the connection of that essence. And more than anything, that's what is making people sick in our society. Well, you know, there's also all the environmental stuff. But it's the way we handle ourselves and the way we carry stress is what creates our vulnerabilities to the other health challenges. So you could have two people smoking and one person gets sick and another person doesn't get sick. And a lot of that has to do with constitution, state of mind, immune system, all these other issues. And I believe that we as human beings can be very self-empowered in healing ailments, healing our bodies, but not even beyond that, going to the next level of being able to really understand energetically how things work and understand how energetically to move into a creative process where you can really change the structure of your physical body. You can change the cellular structure. So when we get into the real focus of power of intention and the power of vibrational intelligence, then you get to the underlying structure of a cell and you can transform it. And you can get to the underlying structure of those things that we're holding on to that can block us very easily released. You could be in therapy for 30 years and not do as much you can do in 5 minutes of energetic work. Because therapy, in a way, enforces it. So it's like, I feel terrible. And you go to the therapist, I feel terrible today. Oh, you feel terrible. Yeah, I feel terrible. And that helps to relieve the pressure of it. But it reinforces on a cellular level that you're teaching your body to be terrible, to feel terrible. So there's a there's a bit of a cycle that you can energetically break out of that cycle by getting to feel into the body in a non-mental, non-linear way and identify where in your body you're holding this wound and then begin to release it on an energetic level with breathing, with energy work. And you can actually, it's a little bit like, you know, just like reducing a swelling, reducing an inflammation. You could reduce the inflammation of an emotional wound through that energetic process. And so even though you may still want to do the talk therapy and you still need the counseling and the crisis counseling, because just like when you go to, you get hit by a car, you don't go to a chiropractor, you go to an emergency room. You know, there are appropriate therapies for certain situations, but if you're walking around as a walking wounded in chronic pain and are not able to find help by those conventional means, then there are other ways that you can work to get underneath and release some of those issues. So this is what I learned from my mother, because, I mean, she died fairly young. She was 49, just before 50. But she was diagnosed when she was 15. And at a time when the lifespan of a person who had MS was very, very short, because the doctors weren't treating it. So my mom, because of her own spiritual power and her own spiritual will, decided, I have 4 children, I'm not going anywhere. And so she just didn't. She just kept going and kept moving through it and kept that strength. And she taught me a level of spiritual integrity that I couldn't have learned any other way. And then when she was actually leaving her body, when she passed away, we communicated after. So that my near-death experience was her death, where her spirit mingled and merged with mine for 3 hours before she moved on to spirit. So I had this precious 3 hours of experiencing her in spiritual perfection. And then she moved on. And so there was no pain, there was no mourning, because I actually knew that she was still alive in another form. And so that gave me a very spiritual and very powerful understanding of truly what a human being is, as being so much more than physical. And the way my mother, even in the absence of medical support, was able to continue her life all that time is because she was using spiritual power. And she was using energetic power in a way that none of us understood what it was. But after I started to learn more about it, I recognized what it was. And that's what any human being can do. So it's pretty powerful and pretty magnificent what's possible.
Yes, indeed.
So we each have our path to find our mission. And I didn't even notice if we had a call. I was so busy yammering here on the mic. The number is 718-780-8888. 718-780-8888. And what I'm sharing with you is a lot of what we're going to be working with in the Healing Circle. It's really going to be about teaching how we can access the natural part of our being that society doesn't give us, that doesn't really teach us. But it's there, it's powerful, and it's you. You know, it's what we are. We're not these limited little beings. We're really very powerful spiritual beings with soul force and we can dip into that creative energy that's in the universe. And just like a star is created in the cosmos, we can create in our own lives in that way. Very powerful. Well, we don't have phone calls, but do you want to play a little more music? How about a David Bowie sense? You know, give him a little tribute. How about, which one would you like? Absolute Beginner. We have Loving the, what is it? The
Loving the Alien.
The Alien.
There's another one. The Wind. Something with Wind.
Okay, let's see. Let's find David Bowie. Wild is the Wind.
That's the one.
So we're going to see if we can get this to come up. And we'll have a little time to come in and say so long. But let's listen.
Yeah.
Been listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine, and with
Paulette Spencer.
And we want to thank you for joining us this morning. Invite you to stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf, which is going to be a end-to-end special featuring David Bowie. So I know you want to stay tuned for that, because actually this is magical. The man's a genius. And he has left us an incredible legacy. So you please do stay tuned for a very special program coming up with Hour of the Wolf. And also, we won't be back to speak to you again about this program that we're doing at the Commons. But for those of you who come to the program at the Commons and you feel like staying till midnight, come and join us on the show. Take care. We're going to make room for Hour of the Wolf. Have a beautiful week, and hopefully we'll see you next week. You can find out more at the website heartofmindradio.com, heartofmindradio.com. And remember, we're going to put all this information up on the website as well. And you can reach me through email, and that is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And you are?
TheNightReport@gmail.com.
All right. Take good care, and please do stay tuned. I think I'll play another David Bowie. Why not? Just start early, except that maybe, well, if it gets played twice, it's okay.
And good morning. Sorry for that horribly abrupt closing. I tried to achieve the opposite, smooth transitions, but not so easy. I have to learn this bleeping board. That's the name, by the way, of the model that we use here. That it says right on it, bleeping board. But we were talking about that at a meeting yesterday, in fact. But, yeah, I've been an engineer here, what, 46, 47 years? I can't run this thing. I was chief engineer for 5 years. I did not chief engineer, chief announcer, God help me. The job Michael Haskins has. Okay, look. It's a Bowie morning. My intention is to talk as little as possible, but we do have a movie review for you, and we're going to go out of that. I will then talk about Bowie for about 2 minutes, and then it's music, which is what it should all be. So first, here is, without Hour of the Wolf theme, there won't be one this morning, Dan Persons. He'll introduce himself.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Let's play 6 Degrees of Charlie Kaufman, shall we? Because we've got three animated films to talk about, and weirdly, they all connect in some way to the guy who wrote Being John Malkovich, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and other comically intellectual flirtations with genre film. The obvious starting point here is Anomalisa, a stop-motion animated film that Kaufman wrote and co-directed along with Duke Johnson, which I interpret to mean that Kaufman handled the voice directing while Johnson took care of the elaborate and quite nuanced performances of the stop-motion figures. Which doesn't mean that Kaufman's credit should be discounted because the film's main conceit relies on the voice performances. The story is incredibly basic. A world-weary motivational speaker travels to Cincinnati to deliver an address and during his overnight stay in a hotel falls in love with one of the attendees. The trick here is that the motivational speaker, Michael, is voiced by David Thewlis. His object of adoration, Lisa, is voiced by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And every other character, male and female, whether stranger or loved one, is voiced by Tom Noonan, with only subtle variations from one character to the next. So the anomaly of Anomalisa works on several levels. For Michael, Lisa's voice elevates her over the deadened perspective he has on his life and the world in general, spurring his infatuation. But Lisa, despite a scarred face concealed by a shock of hair, is, as a person, hardly anomalous herself. She's shy, self-denigrating, awkward personally and physically, naive in her tastes and attitudes, and Michael's exaltation of her despite her overall banality is supposed to be the film's supreme gag. It's frankly an elitist attitude, and much as I hate using that word, it's thrown around far too much, I think, it does feel like a neighborhood Kaufman is very comfortable in. To be fair, Michael, with his pathological dissatisfaction with everything, ends up the eventual butt of the joke, culminating in a stunningly staged sequence where he breaks down while delivering his stock speech. Duke Johnson's character animation is fantastic here, and throughout the film, actually. While Lisa is ultimately ennobled by her ability to delight in life. But I wind up where I frequently am with Charlie Kaufman's work, annoyed at this kind of intellectual, condescending classism. What redeems the film is Kaufman's razor-sharp, deadpan humor, which seems perfectly attuned to the technical demands of stop-motion animation, and the experimental feel of the production, with the seams of the replacement animation faces clearly visible and becoming a plot point in a couple of places, and a few bizarre narrative ellipses just to throw everything off-center. Anomalisa is a smaller story than I had anticipated. As befits a Kaufman character, Michael doesn't go through a narrative arc as much as a narrative straight line. But in its small-scale way, it is an engaging and at times heartbreaking experience. So, Given Charlie Kaufman's pedigree, Anomalisa is a prestige offering. But we're dealing with another prestige animated offering as well, if a belated one. Only Yesterday is out of Japan's Studio Ghibli and directed by Isao Takahata, who directed, among others, the devastating Grave of the Fireflies and the more recent and quite ravishing The Tale of the Princess Kaguya. Originally released in 1991, Only Yesterday tells the tale of a young woman, Taiko, voiced in the original by Miki Imai and in the dubbed version by Daisy Ridley, who decides to vacation by working on a farm while reminiscing about her childhood. It's a very grounded story, actually, with only a few moments of metaphorical fantasy, the best being when young Taiko takes flight after her first awkward flirtation with a male classmate. Otherwise, the film thrives on its deeply observed examination of the joys and anguishes of childhood. Standout episodes include Taiko's first taste of fresh pineapple and the tectonic sociological impact of sex education. And the film thrives as well on its lovely depiction of rural life. Maybe too lovely, actually. As befits a Studio Ghibli film, Only Yesterday exalts country over city, but here, in the absence of mystical forest guardians or shape-shifting tanukis, the paradisiacal outlook gets a little heavy. You can be forgiven for sitting and thinking, it can't all be this good. Nevertheless, Only Yesterday is lovely, it is touching, and it is great that it finally found its way to the U.S. Our final film, Hell and Back, is connected to Charlie Kaufman's Anomalisa not only through the fact that both films are stop-motion animated, but also because Anomalisa's producer, Dino Stamatopoulos, has previously worked with Hell and Back's studio Shadow Machine on such TV shows as Moral Oral and Mary Shelley's Frankenhole. Unfortunately, the animation is the major draw here. The production is beautiful, beautifully designed, and quite ambitious, if not as exquisitely nuanced. And it's a shame that it's all squandered on a bro comedy take on Orpheus, with two friends descending into hell to retrieve a third friend who's been snatched by Satan after he's welched on a bed involving a breath mint. That's right, a breath mint. It's got a hell of a voice cast, a comedy who's who that includes Nick Swardson, Mila Kunis, Maria Bamford, Bob Odenkirk, Paul F. Tompkins, Susan Sarandon, H. John Benjamin. But then, every animated project aspiring to an adult audience has H. John Benjamin. And it's got a few good running gags, such as a demon who tortures a damned soul with such low-grade torments as a slow escalator and a combined Taco Bell Pizza Hut that never has any Pizza Hut. I'm not sure anybody outside of New York and Los Angeles would get that joke. But every time the film lands on a promising idea, such as the condemned but level-headed bro being better at organizing hell than Satan himself, it's dropped for such unfortunate stuff as a truly unfunny running gag about Orpheus, yes, the actual Orpheus is a character, about Orpheus being raped by a tree. You can repeat it as many times as you want, it's never going to be funny. Breaks my heart because there's an impressive level of effort being put into Hell and Back. Shadow Machine is a very good animation studio, but it's in service of material that really doesn't deserve it. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.